Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Nuria Martinez-Keel.
And I'm Dale Denwalt. You're listening to The Source.
Thanks for joining us as we discuss the Oklahomans' most impactful stories with the reporters who wrote them.
This week, we examine the case of Julius Jones, a man imprisoned on death row for almost two decades. It's a story of murder, of race, and a community fighting to bring the case to the governor's desk for commutation.
In July 1999, Edmond resident Paul Scott Howell was murdered outside his parents' home in front of his sister and his daughters. The suspect drove away in Howell's SUV. Within days, police turned their attention to Jones, a 19-year-old former student athlete. Jones was convicted of Howell's killing and sentenced to death. But in recent years, Jones' case has gained nationwide attention and celebrity support for his claim of innocence. His push for release took a step forward this week when his case came before the Oklahoma Pardon and Parole Board. Joining us this week is reporter Josh Delaney, who's helped cover the case for the Oklahoman. What decision did the Pardon and Parole Board make this week?
Yeah, so the vote Monday was essentially whether to move the case forward to what's called stage two of Oklahoma's commutation process. And this was pretty much a critical first step. With rare exceptions, this commutation would not have moved forward. In other words, Julius Jones wouldn't have had many other options. Typically, if a commutation application is denied at the first stage, a prison inmate will have about 3 years to reapply. Well, in this case, it moved forward to stage two, and more opportunities will be presented for Julius Jones to make his claim before the board. In fact, he likely will speak to the board via video conference. So if they move the case along at a stage two vote, then it goes before Governor Kevin Stitt's desk, and he will have ultimate approval over the commutation, as he does with every other commutation case in the state.
And that the board will vote again on whether to recommend his commutation in June. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Josh, it's somewhat unusual for a death penalty case to go to the Pardon and Parole Board, right? I believe this may be the first time that that's been considered.
Yes. Yeah. It is. Highly unusual. Some death row cases have been turned over, though, in the past. But yeah, it is highly unusual in Oklahoma.
And so ultimately, this decision rests on the governor. He can pass the Pardon and Parole Board's recommendations, but the Pardon and Parole Board aren't the ones who actually say that, yeah, your sentence is commuted.
That is correct. They will recommend that an individual's case be commuted. They make that recommendation to the governor, and then the governor will have the ultimate say on a particular case.
So it's not much of a surprise that prosecutors haven't backed down and want to see Jones executed. What evidence makes them feel so confident in his guilt?
Well, they have a few things that they point to. One is that the weapon was wrapped in a bandana that was found in the Jones home. Now, it is claimed by Jones's team that he was home at the time that Paul Howell was murdered. The defense and has said that this weapon was ultimately found there. And then they point to one eyewitness who identified Jones. And then another issue is that a couple of years ago, the defense attorneys wanted to do DNA testing on a red bandana. They thought this would exonerate him. Well, it turned out that Jones's DNA was found on a red bandana connected to the case. So those, in my view, are their strongest points for prosecution.
Now, since Jones was arrested, he's maintained his innocence. He claims that he was framed by someone else who was involved in the case, Christopher Jordan. How was Jordan involved, and what's his status now?
Yeah, so this this gets a little bit complicated, but at trial, an acquaintance of his, and we have to go back and realize that Julius Jones was about 19 years old. He was 19 years old at the time of his arrest. At trial, his acquaintance Christopher Jordan implicated Julius Jones in this shooting death of Mr. Howell, and then under a plea agreement, Christopher Jordan pleaded guilty to first degree murder and conspiracy to commit a robbery for his role, which included a carjacking. He was sentenced to, I think it was 30 years in prison. Recently, an inmate in Arkansas claims that another inmate heard Christopher Jordan, according to this other inmate, admit to killing Paul Howe. And this information comes from a man named Roderick Wesley. He put out this statement in early to mid-February. And in part, he says that, or this quote is that Jordan said to me, my co-defendant is on death row behind a murder I committed. He was acting like he was sorry for what he had done, but he said that he was not going to jump out there and give himself up to the wolves. And this is quoting an inmate, quoting Jordan. So it gets a little, allegedly or supposedly, so it gets a little bit complicated. And his Julius Jones's attorneys say that Arkansas convict Roderick Wesley is now the third person to come out and say that Christopher Jordan confessed to being the one who ultimately killed Paul Howell. So there's a lot of, I don't want to use legal terms here, but you have a convict saying that he heard from somebody else that Mr. Jordan has admitted to this.
And there's also some more evidence that Jones's attorneys have said implicates Jordan as the one who pulled the trigger specifically. I think there's a witness statement that said the person who shot, who pulled the trigger, had long hair. Jordan at the time had long hair. Jones has always shaved his head, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a central issue here. You've summed up the case for both sides when it comes to that point. There's been debate over that since the trial.
Oklahoma County District Attorney David Prater asked one member of the Pardon and Parole Board to recuse himself from voting on Jones' case. What was the dispute around that?
Yeah. So, Adam Luck, who is the acting chair at the moment, he retweeted a tweet by Kim Kardashian, who has been one among many celebrities to call for Julius Jones to be released. And this tweet and this retweet was in October of 2019, and this came up just a couple of days before the stage one vote that happened. And David Prater, the Oklahoma County district attorney, wrote to the Pardon and Parole Board and really to Adam Luck specifically, saying that he publicly demonstrated his personal bias in regards to the case. Now, this tweet was Kim Kardashian asking to please help Jones by asking the board to give consideration to his case. Adam Luck went on created a Twitter thread more or less explaining the board's processes. And what he said Monday was that he was not going to recuse himself, that explaining the board's processes on the social media platform was a way to broadcast their processes to as wide an audience as possible. So he didn't feel like that merited recusing himself from the vote.
So we're still a few months away from at least knowing the fate of this case and of Julius Jones. Now, what are the options that are open to the governor? If he takes Jones's side here, does that mean that Jones goes free, or just means that his death sentence is wiped away and he just has to spend the rest of his life in prison? What's the deal?
Yeah, if he denies it, for all appearances, looks like Julius Jones will ultimately face the death penalty. Now, his defense is saying what they want specifically is for his case to be reduced to time served and to be released from prison. So I am not sure if there's what there is between what the defense is wanting and the governor simply denying the commutation. Now, on principle, in Oklahoma, commutations are available if new information has come out about the case, or if the punishment is deemed accessible. So a commutation is supposed to be, in the principle of the matter, a reduction of a sentence. So what room the governor might have in there, that I'm not too clear on. But the case is supposed to come up again around June.
We will be eagerly watching that. Josh, thanks for joining us this week. Podcast listeners, stick around. We're going to talk to another Oklahoman reporter about how the community has responded to Jones's call for commutation. Josh, thanks for joining us this week.
The Oklahoman's Carla Hinton is with us now. Carla, you covered the reaction to the Pardon and Parole Board's decision from Jones's family and local activists. What was the response when his application for commutation moved forward on Monday?
Well, I'll tell you, we were outside the Oklahoma Pardon and Parole Board's office, and there were probably 30 people there, and some pastors were speaking, and some other people were just kind of encouraging the crowd and that sort of thing. They knew that they were waiting on word of the vote regarding Julius Jones' commutation request. And we had been told, like maybe 5 minutes before we heard that a decision had been handed down, I had been told by someone in the crowd that that we were going to be there for a while, that, you know, it would probably be, you know, maybe an hour or so. The next thing I know, there was a supporter in his truck that was right in front of the building, and he went over and talked to a couple of the supporters at the front of the group, and they all started listening to the phone. And what I heard later was that he had the he was listening on the phone to the vote. And when they realized that they got the three of the four votes, which is what they needed to move the process forward for Mr. Jones, they just everyone started yelling, screaming. There was a lady who was saying hallelujah. They started hugging each other. I believe there were some tears. There were a lot of people that were very, very invested in this. It sounds like they're very invested in this.
It must have been a really emotional moment for these people who had gathered to see whether the Pardon and Parole Board would side with Jones's call for commutation. Now, his supporters here locally also have a lot of support nationally and maybe even internationally. There's a lot of celebrity attention that this case has gotten. What are some of the famous names that people might recognize who have gotten behind this support for his commutation?
Well, one of them, and I'll say right off the bat, is actress Viola Davis. She is the one who helped produce, I believe she produced I guess for lack of a better term, it was a production, a TV production called The Last Defense. And it highlighted what they found were, or they believe they found some inaccuracies and some things in Mr. Jones's original case that needed to be looked at again. And so that aired, and that got a lot of attention from a lot of different people. So that's Viola Davis's one, obviously, because she was behind The Last Defense. Kim Kardashian was one of the latest celebrities to get behind it. I believe she came here to Oklahoma not too long ago to speak about that issue. There have been a lot of NBA players, Russell Westbrook, Blake Griffin. Russell, you know, has ties to Oklahoma because he was played for the Thunder, Oklahoma City Thunder, for many, many years. And then, of course, Blake Griffin was born and raised here in Oklahoma, Oklahoma boy. And he also lent his voice to this idea that Mr. Jones needed another hearing, or at least another chance at someone giving him clemency or commutation. Oh, and then we also have NFL players. One of them in particular, Baker Mayfield, who of course was a star quarterback at OU and then went on to the Cleveland Browns. And so he is supporting this effort as well. So that's maybe four or five people just right off the bat that I can think of.
And obviously Kim Kardashian, who has really been incredibly vocal about the case on social media. And we talked with Josh Delaney in the last segment, and he talked about how one of the Pardon Parole members almost got in hot water. You know, he was asked to recuse himself because he retweeted one of Kim Kardashian's tweets. Interesting to see so much national celebrity attention focused on a case here in Oklahoma.
Right, right. And of course, you know that from what I understand in reading Josh's stories and some other stories in our own newspaper, I believe that the prosecutors are saying that they don't want people to forget about the bare bones of this case just because celebrities are involved. And so that's the celebrities being involved kind of takes the case to a whole nother level.
Carla, a key piece of context around this case, I think, is the racial dynamics. Jones is a black man accused of killing a white businessman in the suburbs. The local Black Lives Matter chapter has gotten behind Jones as part of their advocacy. Just how important are issues of race in this case, especially among the people that you spoke to outside the Pardon and Parole Board meeting on Monday?
Well, it was very evident in every meeting or gathering that I've been to regarding Mr. Jones' case that race is a big issue for his supporters. Monday, when they were waiting on the Pardon and Parole Board's decision, there was a young man there who talked about, not wanting to see another black man in behind bars forever. because that way he won't be able to participate in, you know, in the system. He won't, you know, obviously he won't be able to vote. He won't be able to participate, you know, with his family, involved in community activities, have a job, that sort of thing. And so there's this idea that it's a, this is another element, the mass incarceration. They talked about mass incarceration and that this is another element of systemic racism that this group is fighting against, that that's the big picture for a lot of people. And I know that early on, I asked that question too, and early on, one of the supporters told me, I believe it was Reverend C.C. Jones Davis or someone else, told me that one of the things that they find particularly frustrating or particularly problematic is that the DA at the time who prosecuted the case, Bob Macy, right off the bat, you know, said that he was going to go for the death penalty. And they felt like without already having, you know, some of the particulars in the case had not played itself out yet. And he was already doing that. And so they felt like that was possibly something that was tied to race because the victim was white and the perpetrators of the suspects were black. And so that's something that people who have been looking at the case in recent years have had a problem with. And they tied in again, once again, to systemic racism. So I believe race plays a huge factor in this case.
Well, Carla, how does Jones's family feel about the decision that happened this week at the Pardon and Parole Board and the next hearing later this year, and eventually it'll reach the governor's desk? Are they optimistic? You talked about, you know, people were celebrating outside the meeting place, outside the building. Was that premature optimism, or do they really have something to look forward to here?
Well, I tell you what, everybody that I talked to, you know, they said, we're so excited. But they also said they realized that this is only the first step, that, you know, there are other steps to be taken. But they argued that without the first step, you don't get to the other steps. And right, that makes sense. So they're cautiously optimistic. I did not go to the media, the news conference that the Jones family had, but I can tell you just maybe a couple of weeks ago when the Jones supporters carried boxes of signatures of a petition that was signed on his behalf down to the Pardon and Parole Board, that his mother was there. Jones's mother was there. And she just said that she feels like the supporters are part of his family. And I got the impression that she is cautiously optimistic and that she realizes that they needed this step in order to get to, you know, get through the rest of the process. I mean, there had to be this vote, and this vote was in the supporters' favor. And so they'll hopefully, for them, they want to see other steps taken in their favor, but they had to have the first step. And that's why I think they were so happy, because had this gone another way, had they not gotten this vote, then from what I understand, I don't think he has very much, he would have any more options. I think he would have very few options to either get out of prison or to for his sentence to be commuted. I think he was going to be out of options.
But what happens if the ultimately, say, the governor decides to reject his call for commutation? Will all of this effort be in vain?
You know what? I don't think so. I think it's really interesting. I've asked that question since I've known about all of this support that has emerged for Mr. Jones. And I think from what I understand, they're going to keep going. Matter of fact, one of the pastors there, Pastor Larry Crudup, he is the senior pastor of Tabernacle Baptist Church, where Mr. Jones' mother has attended and is a ministry leader. He mentioned to the crowd there that he wanted to encourage them that this battle is something that needs to be waged long haul in terms of the battle against systemic oppression, systemic racism, you know, getting the powers that be to see mass incarceration the way the supporters see it as being something that is systemically racist, you know, inherently racist. I think that he was telling them, if you get tired, this is one of his quotes, and I didn't get to put it into my story, I don't think. When you get tired, tap someone else on the shoulder and let them, you know, go some for you, and then you can get back in the race. But I thought that was real interesting. In other words, what he was saying is, this is perhaps bigger than Mr. Jones, and so I don't think they're going to stop. They're going to be looking at other cases. I kind of got that impression. I think someone even said that they're going to be looking at maybe some other cases where they feel like there's been injustice, not just racial injustice, but maybe some other injustices or inaccuracies or errors or things like that they feel like the state needs to look at.
Well, Carla, thank you so much for taking us into the activism aspect. It's been so prominent whenever you hear the name Julius Jones, so we really appreciate you discussing that with us today. Thanks for joining us this week. This podcast is possible because of the Oklahomans' subscribers. We encourage you to subscribe if you can. You can read these stories and more every day in The Oklahoman and at oklahoman.com. Check back next Friday for a new episode.